Philo community, welcome to another episode of the Philo podcast, episode 112 to be exact. And throughout all of our time here together, our goal has remained the same, and that's to help you become more effective so that your church can be more effective. Every conversation we have on this podcast, it's designed to help us all understand a little bit more about ourselves and how to do what we do at our churches a little better today than we did yesterday. And if you're new to our podcast, welcome. And if you've been around a while, welcome back. And thanks for using the Philo podcast as a resource to help you get better. And if you're looking for additional ways to get better and become more effective, consider coming to the Philo conference May 7th and 8th in the Chicagoland area. And maybe even to take it a step further, maybe bring some people with you from your production ministry. I mean, imagine the impact you could have on your services if you were all getting a little bit better together. The price is about to go up, and you can use the discount code PODCAST10. That's podcast, all lowercase, and the number 10. And you'll get 10% off any kind of ticket. And I think you'll be glad you made the investment. All right, short intro today. We're getting right to our podcast. Our next guest is a Philo 2024 conference main session speaker, and he's also the senior pastor of Church on the Move. It's Whit George. And I'm so excited to hear from him at the conference. But before then, we had a really great conversation for this podcast. So let's just jump right to it. I'm super pleased to have on the podcast today, second time guest, Whit George, which is funny because the first time you were the guest, that recording didn't actually happen. So we're here again. Right. So welcome again.
It's great to be back for the second time.
I mean, there aren't too many people that have been on the twice. Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm in rare company.
That's right. So you're going to be one of our main session speakers at the Philo Conference this year, year 2024. Super excited to have you and just loving this chance to talk again just about your life and some ideas around production in the local church. So thanks again for joining us. And maybe just give everybody, what is it you do exactly now? And then, I'd love to hear your story getting there.
Yeah, so right now I'm the senior pastor of Church on the Move, a church that my dad started 36, 37 years ago. I'd have to think about it for a second, 1987. So whatever that is, 37 years this year.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I've been senior pastor there since 2017. Before that was for 10 years or 11 years or so, served as the, actually 9 years, I think, now that I think of it, was what we just titled the arts director, which basically meant that I oversaw kind of the weekend service, the production side, the worship side, anything that happened in that weekend service, I oversaw all of that. And out of that kind of came a conference that we did called Seeds. I don't know if any members of your community will have been to that. I'm sure there's some that have. Maybe you might remember Andrew Stone, who was our production director, passed away in 2019. Dear friend. It was a good season. I'm sure we'll talk more about that. But that was kind of my path to pastoring kind of comes through an unconventional way. I didn't plan for ministry, didn't kind of graduate high school thinking that's what I was going to do, went to work for my dad, and just kind of found that I had some artistic sensibility, which led ultimately to where it led, and then ended up taking the church from there and have been pastor for going on 7 years, and that's been quite a journey. So that's the short version.
Yeah, amazing. I have to say, this morning, I don't know how I got onto this, but I watched part of an episode of Gospel Bill on YouTube. Yeah, I don't know. I went down some rabbit hole and was...
Found yourself a Gospel Bill. It's like Alice in Wonderland through the looking glass.
Yeah, that's right. When you say you were working for your dad, was that kind of the beginning, was working on the TV show?
Yeah, so, I mean, that show had stopped by time I... So I started working at the church in 1994, and he had stopped making probably the version that you saw. There were still some film and video projects that he worked on. And that's a lot of where I began, just kind of doing, you know, grunt work, which, you know, back in the day, it would look like, you know, moving this cable, this huge set of cables, shanks is I think what they call them. I was never, you know, super knowledgeable. I just did what I was told, you know, and to make videos back then, I mean, it required crazy, huge lights and generators, all this. I mean, it was so much more involved. Today, you can kind of point and shoot, use a lot of natural light, maybe a lightweight light setup, you know.
Right, you just
don't have any of that anymore. I mean, or you didn't have that back then. It was huge. It was so involved.
Big cameras, and everything,
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember I remember testing out Sony. The Sony reps came over and did a test for us for like the first digital HD. Okay. So there was no, you know, HD. There was film, right? Which was high resolution, but it was super expensive to shoot on film.
Yeah.
Because of the cost of the film and the developing. And then the cameras were well into the hundreds of thousands of dollars just to get a camera. And so they came out with this, you know, beta cam. I don't know. Some of your community will certainly know what that means. So others will be like, what is that? Just Google it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like a HD kind of beta cam. I want to say that. And I remember, you know, watching the test. Could shoot at 24 frames. I mean, this was revolutionary stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Had this monitor that was probably, you know, like 19, 20 inches. And all, like for the camera and the monitor and whatever else, I mean, it was like 50 grand. I mean, it was crazy.
So
that's where I started. And then also had, you know, I was into graphic design, did that for a while as well. Thought that's what I was going to be, a musician. And kind of all those things came together in 05 when Andrew Stone was hired, as well as Andy Christman, who was our worship pastor those years as well. And my dad asked me to lead that group and just entered what I would call just like a really sweet season of leadership and team. It was just kind of, I don't know, it's one of those things that was where it was just like a beautiful era.
Yeah.
Some of my best friends, we worked together, some of the most talented people I've ever been around. And we did a lot of fun stuff. It's where the Seeds Conference was birthed out of that. And a lot of the creative work that we did that got us some attention and all of that kind of thing was all happening during that era. And so it was really beautiful to be a part of. But I kind of knew in all of that eventually my path, and it started to become more clear the deeper into that I went, that eventually my path would lead me to being a senior pastor. But but yeah, I mean, so I guess all that just to say, if you're looking for my bona fides, I did do my time in the arts and production world.
Thinking about being Andrew Stone and Andy Christman's boss, I'm imagining you're younger than both of them.
I'm younger than both of them.
So being younger is one thing, but then, you know, two people that they're overqualified.
Yeah.
And, you know, how can I lead these people? I mean, how did you feel? Was it just because you were the senior pastor's son, you felt like, yeah, I can do this? Or was it, that feels like it would be terrifying to me.
No, you know, I mean, I'm pretty self-confident, so I wasn't worried about it, but I was also, maybe let's just say, like I had the sense enough to know not to boss them around in the beginning. Andrew especially, like he was not the kind of guy that would allow you to.
Yeah.
But I also knew, and I think this is like, I think this is a great principle to learn. I think for anybody leading anybody is like when you're hiring people, particularly people that are qualified and good at what they do. And this is something that I see, I think young leaders make a lot of mistakes with, is we think that to be in charge means I get to have my way or tell other people what to do.
Yeah.
But there's a way in which you have to be thoughtful about how you, even though you have thoughts and a perspective, and I certainly had those, I had to be thoughtful about how I got that done. So for the first couple of years, I didn't really give them a ton of direction. I let Andy do his thing. I let Andrew do his thing. And it was evident they knew what they were doing. And I could tell, and for the first time I heard Andrew Stone mix, I'd never heard anything like that in my life. And so immediately, you know, it's just respect to him. So what you don't do, like with a guy like Andrew, is roll up into the sound booth and say, ooh, these guitars are too loud, turn them down. You just don't do that.
Right.
So what I learned to do was, especially with Andrew, lead through questions or give him a lot of time. Like if I was sitting in a rehearsal and I was hearing something I didn't like, the first thing I learned is just to keep my mouth shut for a while. That would do a lot of people really well. Give your audio guy just space, because chances are he's not happy with the mix either. And you running back there every time to give them your notes on what they should do or not. It's you know, and especially if you think, this is a good one, especially if you think you know a little bit about audio engineering, keep your mouth shut. Don't talk about, you know, like EQ ranges and all. Just stay out of that. Just like be respectful to the, like treat them like they actually know what they're doing. And if you say, well, they don't know what they're doing, then maybe that's where, like, that's where we need to start the conversation is who have we hired, right? But I learned to let them, to give them their space and to respect them. So when I would deal with Andrew, I would be really respectful. Just, I would come and you had to approach him in the right way and you had to. But if you did, and if you treated him like with respect, I mean, he would do anything. He would do anything. He wasn't hard to lead because he took responsibility for his kind of piece of the pie and way more. And so I think when you take more responsibility than you should from people that can handle responsibility, it's not just you're over functioning and you're in some sense it's demeaning to the other person because you're treating them as a child. I've watched some people. Andrew was not the kind of guy who would tolerate that. And so, honestly, he was doing you a favor to just tell you, yeah, stop talking to me that way or don't come up to me like that. And so it was like, I can either get offended at that and have a power showdown, and he's not going to last very long if I do that. Or I can learn to humble myself, take a different approach, and got the best out of him. And what meant so much to me, and I knew this before Andrew died, it was so meaningful to me, the thing that, like, really I take a lot away from, and Natasha, his wife, had told me this too, was just that of all the things that Andrew did, and he was proud of a lot, he'd worked for a lot of people and done a lot of things, he was really especially proud of the work that he did with us at COTM and that we got to do together. And that meant a lot to me because, man, it's like when you have, I don't know, someone of that, with that caliber of like they're just good at their craft, when you can earn their respect, man.
Yeah.
That's fun. And so we had that with each other. We were peers by the end. It was really beautiful. And so he respected what I did and I respected what he did. And when you do that, you can really get the best out of people. And so that was fun. But I was intimidating at the beginning.
I can remember when I first started working at Willow Creek. So I had a job description that they'd given me. And then when I arrived, they're like, oh, and by the way, you're going to lead the audio team. And I'm like, well, okay, number one, I haven't mixed audio in a long time. So, all right. And there are a couple guys on the audio team that like started, you know, kind of invented church production in my mind.
Right.
You want me to lead these people? Are you nuts? Like, and just learning, listening a lot. And I love your thing about like, just keep your mouth shut. I usually would tell people, write it down. You've got feedback, write it down. Yeah. And then when we get through this, okay, let's show me your notes. But I'm in the middle of something here. Like, let's give our people the space to work this out. And you know what? In 5 minutes, you're going to cross the note off. You know, that's what's going to end up happening. So I love that.
So good. That happened so many times with Andrew is I'd have it in my mind and then it'd be, and then 5 minutes later, it's like, okay, that's done. I don't even have to say that anymore. Because he's competent. That's the best thing.
Was there anything that was a struggle in that transition going from kind of arts director to senior pastor? Were you sort of looking forward to, oh, and okay, now finally we can get to do what we've always dreamed of? Or, was it maybe a little more subtle than that?
It was very hard.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was really hard. And I think it was hard because, and I think anybody that, is, you know, the life is this way, ministry is particularly this way, I think. There are just really, there are seasons that you have to learn to embrace and also learn to let go. There are times where it seems like God is really blessing something and you lean into it. And for me, that 05 to kind of 2013, 2014 stretch was a beautiful, wonderful season. And then it was over. And it's amazing. It takes you, it took me a while to admit that it was over and to be all right with it and to mourn it and to celebrate it and to not try to recreate it. And so when I stepped into, you know, kind of more, so kind of the 2014 to 2017 to kind of clarify, for me, I was an executive pastor at Church on the Move, which is using that term really loosely because I am anything but, it was a way for my dad to sort of get me between him and the rest of the staff so that the transition could begin with the staff first instead of just went to senior pastor. And so there was a 3-year kind of interim period there where I was leading more behind the scenes with the staff and letting them get acclimated to my style of leadership, which was wise on his part. And in that period, and even into the first few years of my kind of senior pastor tenure, was trying to wrestle with how we would approach the arts and services, and for me to even think about the kind of church that we were going to be moving forward. And so I ended up with all these kind of fits and starts of trying to recreate what we had done, and only to be disappointed, for it to feel like it wasn't working. We just couldn't generate the same kind of energy, momentum, and then you feel like a failure, like you're not doing very good. And so it created a lot of complicated feelings until eventually I just realized that era is done and it's okay. And to just move on, and many of the team have moved on. Of course, Andrew passed away. Andy still leads with us, but on kind of a contract basis. Angie moved to, and her husband Sam moved to Atlanta. Jesse Anderson is taking a different job as well. I mean, there's just like a lot of that team. Chris Munch is now in the world of comedy online, has 100,000 followers on Instagram doing just comedy, which is wild. And so it's been, you know, a lot of them have found just a next step that God's led them to, but we couldn't hold it together anymore. And so learning to move off of that and be okay with it was actually really, really challenging. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a lesson in there somewhere of just, you know, learning to move with God and the different seasons that you encounter. But for me, it was particularly challenging to sort of sort out who I was going to be going forward, what would be my level of involvement, you know, going from being arts director every day with these folks to senior pastor now. You know, and how would I relate to that whole team, and still have relationship there and still work with that team, but on a much different, in a much different way and scale than I did then. And our church is just different. We're a different kind of church. We're not using the weekends in nearly as an attractional way as we used to. Yeah. And what's cool is that God's blessing what we're doing now. So yeah, I think it's cool to look back and celebrate and even for the period, mourn the change, but also to embrace where God is leading. And I think that's just part of what it means to follow the Lord.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting too that when you look back at kind of the sweet years, you know, that will never be repeated again, you know, there was something very unique about that. There's part of it that, okay, hard work was involved, no question. I know Andrew enough to know that, you know, some long nights and some crazy situations, you know, working hard, but for the most part, like living life where everything's working, like it's just have an idea, execute it, more people are coming. You know, there's this kind of like we got it. Yeah. We got the magic touch here. And the, you know, just the realization when you figure out that, ooh, that season is over and there's nothing, I can't do any of that stuff. None of it's working anymore. I feel like the way God has wired us up, you know, to be so self-resilient in so many ways and self-starters and all this stuff. But when you get down to the bottom of it, it's like God's moving. Are we aware enough to be kind of joining him in that? Or are we still trying to make the thing happen?
Yeah, I think the church is quite well known for holding on to the past until the point of death.
Oh yeah.
You know, refusing to move on, refusing to accept that that doesn't work anymore. I mean, you know, the Seeds conferences that we did were so fun. I loved being a part of them, and that got, I mean, part of the reason we can't move on too is because it's tied into our identity and ego. And so it's like, that's what made me somebody. And, you know, I mean, wherever I went for a season of my life, not, you know, and within the church world was, oh, Seeds conference. You know, people knew that.
Yeah.
So many people, I mean, we were seeing those conferences were selling out in like 90 minutes.
Yeah, right.
And like, that just doesn't happen, you know? And so it was something special. And then it was like, it's that time is done. And we haven't done one since, I'm trying to think, maybe 2017 was the last one we did, something like that, 2016. Sounds I'm not sure when, maybe. Remember, anyway, and I don't, there's not one on the horizon. I've thought about it, been around that road so many times, but it's just like, it's not, it's done.
Yeah.
And maybe there's some expression of helping the local church, you know, for us in the future. I would love for there to be, but also it's just learning to say it was a beautiful season. God was good. and let's move on and follow him where he's going now. I think the thing is you're following the Lord, not following some method.
Sure.
Yeah, and so we do get attached to methods. Yeah. We get attached to strategies, and you have to be willing to.
Yeah, let them go and
yeah, go to the Lord's
be ready to move on. It's real easy to go on social media and see what other churches are doing. And, yeah. You know, a lot of the visuals that we're seeing are from the weekend experience and all these lights and, you know, big stack, you know, huge line arrays and all this stuff. And it's real easy to get sort of wrapped up in kind of what you're seeing versus like what's really going on behind the scenes. And I just, mm-hmm. again, thinking about the season ending, you know, in that transition period of like trying and trying and trying, you know, to do something, you know, bigger or, you know, better or whatever. There was a season of time like trying so hard to make something happen. Mm. And then getting to the point where I imagine you are now where it's like, all right, just like, let's take all this away or as much as we can and try less hard. I don't know how do you find the right path of like, okay, let's stop striving. I mean, it's like a Bible verse.
You know, Todd, I think, I mean, I see that. I've done it myself. Mm. It's sort of the notion that we will arrive, and almost it can even be personal. I've personalized it myself, which is like, I'll be somebody when I am in a, you know, when our church is able to do this or when I, you know, when we'll arrive when we have, you know, I remember feeling that way. It was like we had the first like four moving lights. I'm like, yes,
we made it.
I felt, you know, like we've done something or, but yeah, you know, we're finally in the category of cool church or whatever. Like we're not as stodgy as we used to be or all of those things. It's easy to fit. And what I see, this is what happens. I think you end up what I would just call faking it. And I see this a lot in churches. What I mean by that is that we represent ourselves as something we're not. Because what happens is we see something at the trendy church or whoever we're looking up to. And we think that if we could just have that, do that, represent, it could be some stage design, some lighting design, screens. I mean, I see this in churches where the room is small enough that everyone in the room can easily see the person on the stage, and yet we still have cameras and giant screens. And it's like, you don't need it. And in a certain sense, I think what I would say to artists, and I'm putting production people in there because I think of production folks as artists. It is a craft. I think the best art is art that tells the truth. Mm. What I mean by that is that art is so much more, and don't devalue your craft by just treating it like wrapping paper. It is more than just like it is and can be the package itself. In other words, like the very way in which I do things can also be the message of what I'm saying. Okay. And I think when we humbly and honestly represent ourselves, and that really comes, so the starting point of that is understanding who are we, what are we doing here, and why are we doing it, really strips away a lot of the questions of like the surface level kind of what I used to call like flash and trash of sort of production design or even, just like how we represent ourselves. Everything has to be slick, polished. It's like, you know, depending on the size of room that you're in or the kind of gathering that you're having. The way I always used to represent this was like, imagine if you're, you know, I saw you two play in Vegas at the Sphere not too long ago. Nice. Had to make the pilgrimage.
Had to, yeah.
YouTube fan. And I mean, it's incredible. The way they dress, behave, talk, everything in that room is different than the way they would dress, talk, behave if they were playing in your living room.
Right.
The scale, the relationship, the setting, it all dictates the presentation. And in a giant space like that, it may be appropriate to move and to like to act and speak with a bit more gravitas and whatever, because the moment and the setting demands it.
Yeah.
But a lot of us, like, we're taking things from like one context and trying to apply them in another, and it just feels false because it's not the right context. And so I think understanding like Who are we? What are we? What are we trying to do? What's the core of what we're gathered here to do? So changes. So like for us, you know, we used to think of church as like the weekend service as something not to miss. And so it was often framed that way. You can't miss this next weekend. And it was a mentality. I see the church really differently now. And so I'm not looking back with a lot of judgment on that era, but I wouldn't want to carry it into the present, but it's how we did things. Sure. And I think God worked and used it and whatever. But it was kind of this, like, we're going to do, something's going to happen this weekend and you're going to want to be a part of it. And so that led to a lot of creative output.
Yeah.
It led to a lot of production design change, lighting change. You know, we were really, really careful with the way things were presented and all of this. Now, we view ourselves as a community who are gathering together to worship Jesus on the weekend. And so it's like, I mean, it used to be that we would change our sets on our stage every 6, 8, 10 weeks if we were going a really long time with a certain set. Now, I don't think we've changed our stage. And it's been years, multiple years. We just haven't adjusted because it doesn't matter. Like, we just, that's not what we're here to do.
Sure.
And the way we represent ourselves and talk to our congregation now, and even, and that's, it is not just an act. It's really the way that we feel is that it really isn't about this. This is just here to light up kind of what we're doing so you can see it. But other than that, it doesn't serve a whole lot of other purpose.
Right, right.
And so I think that's why I say telling the truth is sort of getting to the core of what you're trying to do and being honest about it and then representing that in the most, I think, humble, excellent, authentic way you can.
Yeah.
I think the church would do well. And it keeps you out of that kind of hamster wheel striving, silver bullet mentality that says if we just had this, that equipment, that technique, that size of room, those cameras, that suddenly our situation would change.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like, it's not.
Right. I went to see a U2 cover band at like an outdoor, it was like a parking lot, municipal parking lot in the, you know, village near us. And they sounded exactly like U2. And the lead singer looked like Bono. I mean, a dead ringer for Bono. And he would, costume changes and all this stuff. And he's so believable. Like, if you saw him walk down the street, you'd be like, oh my gosh, Bono is in our town.
Yeah, sure.
He was doing these gigantic, you know, stadium moves, you know, just gestures.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
and like, there's like 100 people in a parking lot, dude. I mean, just what are you doing? And
calm down a little bit.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
And just that idea of like taking this thing, you know, out of context and trying to make it work in your situation. Like, this is over the top. I mean, it's entertaining, but it's not real.
That's so good. And I think that's, you know, think about it. I mean, we're so much more aware these days of what's happening in the broader body of Christ through worship albums and recordings and, whatever. Like, we see the videos and we see the social media. And it just, I think there's benefit to that kind of sharing, but it's also dangerous because we end up wanting, not only comparing ourselves, but falling into the trap of trying to become or copying and pasting what other people are doing.
Yeah.
I think it's a real problem.
Yeah. Looking back on your time, you know, the sort of golden age of your time as arts director, like, is there anything, now that you're the lead pastor, anything that you think, gosh, I was such an idiot trying to get my way, or, you know, thinking this way about how church works, or even something that you appreciate about the team that you have around you now, that, you know, the way they're interacting with you as the senior leader, that you're like, I wish I'd done this differently, and I'm really happy how it's going now? Or,
you know, As I said, I really love the season that we got to work in. I think what I learned was if you treat people like consumers, they're going to treat this church as a consumable product.
Yeah, interesting.
And you don't really have a community as much as you have a group of people who believe that you're offering the best product at the moment. And when they find another better product, they're going to leave you.
Interesting, yeah.
And certainly our whole church wasn't like that. But, you know, you felt that. And I think the pressure that you felt was kind of this dance, monkey dance, like, I'll put on a better show next week. And it just, the feeling that I had was that it just keeps escalating. And I think we did a good job of, you know, like, I mean, I really do feel like that what we did in that season was really authentically, honestly, creative work given to benefit our community and to love the Lord. I truly believe that. And you can look back on some of the things we did, and I'm sure that they would merit some criticism from some folks, but I know the motives with which we created them. But also mixed in with that, because your motives are never really fully pure. I mean, there's also the idea that if we can put together, we're going to blow minds, you know, we're going to rock worlds. Right, like, yeah, people are going to be so impacted and blown away by all of this that it's going to produce, you know, people are going to respond. And certainly we attracted a lot of attention. But I guess what I've learned is that is not the rock on which the church is built. Mm. And this isn't a performance every week. I hesitate to use, you know, I'm not going to call anybody out who calls their services experiences. I prefer the word service to an experience, only because an experience denotes something that I consume. A service is something that I offer. I mean, it has the word serve in it, you know? I mean, like, that when you think we're coming to a service, I'm coming to offer a service to the Lord. Like, you know, the people of God in the Old Testament would come and offer a sacrifice. That's what I'm there to do in so many ways. And so I think my whole vantage point for the church has shifted to where I see the church more as a community of believers, interestingly, not a machine to win the lost. And I think there's certainly an evangelistic aspect to the church. It is the Great Commission. We can't discount that, but I don't think that is the center of the church. I mean, the church by definition is a community or a congregation of the people of God. And so to sort of frame it as, and I think this is, this is just my personal theological take or ecclesiology, would be that if you make the church strictly evangelistic or more about the outsider than the insider, I think you warp what the church is to the point that it will eventually become unrecognizable as the church, because by definition, the church is the people of God.
Yeah.
And there are certain qualifications that you have to meet to become, like, to be a part of the people of God, I suppose, unless you're a universalist, which I'm not. And so, yeah, it changes the point of view. If I could, I mean, I know I'm not speaking primarily to pastors here, but if I could, what I would tell them is figure out, I think many of us, and I included myself in this, do not really have a brass tacks to the ground definition of what the church is. And therefore, we've just inherited a model that was passed on to us, and we haven't really considered what it means to be the church. And so our model or our practice or our liturgy, if you want to call it that, has sort of become a reflection of what we think the church is. And I think in large part, much of what in the evangelical, especially non-denominational stream that I come from, has the church had become a kind of consumer-oriented institution, which is we will have the best kids classrooms, the nicest building, the coolest service, the best preaching. Much of what was taught in conferences was all about how to get better so that your congregation will grow. And I'm all for getting better, but I just think, man, like, that is ultimately, that is not the core of the church, is not becoming so good at what we do that we can attract the most, you know, the broadest, biggest possible audience, but rather to serve the community that God has entrusted us with. Yeah. And so it has changed the way that we still put a lot of effort into music. We still want there to be excellence in production and the whole thing. Like, we put a lot of, but we're just, it comes from a whole different place, which is, we're not here really impressing people. We're here offering we're offering worship to the Lord and leading our community into that place of worship. And if there are outsiders here, we want them to feel welcome.
Yeah, yeah.
But the orientation of our weekend is not primarily toward the outsider. And so, like, you know, one of the things that I tell our team regularly is just, like, no one is surprised to find themselves at church. No one is walking into your building or into a service and going, wait a minute, what
is this?
The Bible? Jesus? How dare they talk to me about this stuff? Like, no one's thinking that way. Everyone, like, they know full well what they, you know, walked into. And so the fact that we're there to worship Christ and to read scripture together and to take communion and hear the, you know, some of the preaching of the word is like, this is, so our services have become honestly a lot more predictable. Mm-hmm. There's we don't vary them much. Whereas in the past it was change it up every week because you want that new factor so that when people show up, their interest is held. But man, I mean, I just would say this, and I'd be curious how anyone might respond to this, but I just go, man, you're fighting. I mean, you're up against Netflix. You're up against like Apple. You're up against Universal. I mean, people are spending billions of dollars, TikTok, Instagram. I think we're fighting a losing battle. Mm-hmm. I don't even think that's what people are looking for. In fact, I think they're looking for a reprieve. They're not looking for a spiritual version of those things. Yeah. They're looking for something else. And I think that is the community of believers. I do think that's what people are looking for. Yeah. So
if I think about some of the big events I've been a part of, the moments that people remember generally were the unplanned, call them mistakes or human moments that happen, you know, in a service. And it's hard to plan those. But just the fact that humanity, you know, in a service matters more to people than how slick something is or how perfectly it was executed. And even at the Philo conference last year, there was a moment where something was supposed to happen, but we couldn't find somebody. And so somebody just pushed me up on stage, stall. So I'm like, okay, just like making stuff up for 2 or 3 minutes. And then afterwards, somebody came up to me like, you guys totally planned that, didn't you? I'm like, No, we did not plan that. It's totally unplanned. But just the fact that, you know, it was such a great moment, you know, that, yeah, people thought, oh, you must have planned something. But I just think people are looking for authenticity more than something slick. Yeah, something real. And the majority of the people listening, you know, we're volunteering on our production team, or we're leading the production team, or we're on staff, you know, somewhere in there. What would you say to this group of people as the senior that are like, what are you looking for in that person? Like, what kind of interaction, what kind of support? Yeah, for your own team, like, what's your hope for them in relation to, you know, like working with you as kind of the lead pastor?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably a couple qualities that come to mind. One, it would be humility. I think humility is the entrance to the kingdom of God. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. I think it's the beginning of the Beatitudes, and that is, it is a posture of humility. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. So I think starting there with humility, which means that you're not afraid to make mistakes. You anticipate them. You anticipate that you will make mistakes, and you're comfortable. It's not that you don't care. It's not that you're, it's like a laissez-faire, whatever, doesn't matter, but rather just not trying to present perfection or having all the answers. One of the most frustrating kinds of people to work with are the people who have all the answers. Right. Sometimes you just want to hear the person that you're working with say, interesting question. I don't know the answer to that, but I'll dig into it and see what I can find. To me, that tells me I'm working with someone who's willing to grow.
Yeah.
And so, you know, growth begins with an admission that you don't know everything. I mean, by definition, that's what you have to be, where you have to be in order to grow. If you know everything, then there's nowhere to, you know, you're God. Done. You can't grow. You're done. Yeah. So I think humility is one of those things. I think taking responsibility is another. Mm-hmm. It's a huge deal with me. It's just, are you willing to take responsibility, meaning no blame shifting. Yeah, not passing the buck off to anyone else, just owning it yourself and dealing with it. And I think the kind of people that I want to be working with are people that are willing to take responsibility. I think that's what, you know, maturity is. I mean, that's what I'm looking for with my kids as they're growing up and they're becoming, you know, young men and women. My job isn't done until they're, you know, responsible. That's what you're trying to get them to learn how to do, is to become responsible, handle their business. Yeah. And so those are a couple things I think I'm looking for. There's probably others if we get to talking about it, but those are at least a couple things that come to my mind that I think Those are the kind of solutions. That's another one.
Oh, wow. Yeah, good
yeah,
one.
Yeah. I mean, instead of just griping about problems, I'm all right with there to be problems. I'm all right with us saying, yeah, we don't know. We're working on that. But ultimately, I think, so here's a way to handle, you know, when you bring me a problem and only a problem, essentially what you're doing is saying, I can't handle this. Will you handle it? Uh-huh. And so now I've inherited part of your job.
Right.
That's just... Yeah. And so what I'm, it's like, but I didn't hire you to do so that I could do your job.
Yeah.
I hired you so you could do your job. Now, if you need some guidance or direction, happy to give that. And we can bounce some things off of one another. But I'm looking for, so it's that sort of initiative. And here's the thing. And I would say this, that organizations and people are, we're filled with reasons for why we can't gain ground.
You'll never be without reasons, yeah.
You'll never run out of them. There's and the best leaders that I know are the ones that just, they don't, you don't hear that stuff come out of their mouth. This is the way we've always done it, or they won't, you know, there's always, with people who don't take responsibility, there's always a lot of talk about they.
Yeah, yeah.
They. And usually what happens with leaders like that is that we end up working on the wrong things. So we end up solving downstream problems or symptoms instead of upstream causes.
Right.
So we don't ever really go to the source of the problem. We don't deal with the real thing. We just kind of, basically we create crutches everywhere.
Yeah.
Organizational, personal crutches where it's like, just learn to live with that broken limb instead of actually dealing with it, having real conversation. Sometimes that requires sitting down with someone in another department. So a lot of what you'll hear is, you know, well, that team, they are always like this. And so what you find again is bad leaders will then often figure out workarounds to issues that they have with other people instead of going to other people and figuring out how to solve it there. We just ignore and gripe.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. So, you know, solutions are part of that, is figuring out how to solve real problems. And that begins by taking responsibility. Anyway, I think all those things are kind of linked together.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love that idea of being a problem solver. Like, I was pretty good at just pointing out the problems, and I don't think that nobody needs that. You know, right. It's not helpful in any way. I think one of the things, too, as I've been talking to churches lately, is that so many tech people do a great job of hiding the problems. And I don't mean hiding on purpose, but in an effort to be responsible with what's been given to me, I'm going to solve these problems and not bother anybody with them, to the point where it gets, you know, the problem is so bad and like teetering on the, you know, brink of failure, and nobody's aware that... Right. We're this close. And so part of it is, yeah, even to be able to point out, hey, just a heads up, this is going on. It's not a problem now, but it could be a problem later. And we're working on solutions or whatever. But yeah, I think in an effort to be responsible, I did this a bunch, just fix the thing with some gaff tape and move on. And yeah, nobody is the wiser. I'm being responsible. You know, I'm using what I have to the fullest. It's great. But to keep leadership in the dark is not good.
Well, I think, yeah, I agree with that, Todd. And I think that it's sort of a faux responsibility, right? Because you're dealing with what I said, like the symptom, but you're failing to address the real problem. And so what that leads to can be bitterness, burnout, a lot of things. And that's a huge issue within the production world. And I've seen it firsthand. And I think if you apply this whole kind of thinking personally, where that leads would be that you're taking, like, for instance, taking responsibility for your own life. Yeah, so for instance, when you're, in other words, instead of allowing yourself to get to a place of burnout, figuring out what you need to say no to, what of your schedule and responsibilities need to be negotiated into other roles, or maybe just flat dropped and not done anymore.
Yeah.
Before you get to the place, I think, like, this is one of the issues of, this is what I would say is not taking responsibility. Nobody, it's nobody else's responsibility to look out for your well-being.
Yeah.
And I think we want it to be so badly.
So bad. Life is easier.
Nobody else is telling me to take a week off or whatever. Yeah, right. It's like, no, you get to, like, you're going to have some, and it's good to have friends and people around you that care about you that can see those things. We ought to have that. But ultimately, it's like, I'm responsible for not burning out. I'm responsible for the state of my soul and my well-being. But we end up, So what we can do is end up using responsibility to cover actually irresponsibility, strangely. Sure. Well, I have to because no one else will. But that's not actually taking responsibility. That's just taking a ton of crap.
Right.
And allowing yourself to be used, allowing yourself to become bitter, whatever, burnt out, tired.
Yeah.
And you're not really good to anybody. So taking responsibility is, it actually looks like drawing boundaries, having tough conversations with leadership to say this is untenable, team can't keep working this way.
Yeah.
So I think you make a really good point in that we don't want to use that, the label of responsibility, to cover up what Pete Scazzaro calls over-functioning.
Oh, interesting.
Which is doing for others what they can and should do for themselves, or maybe just covering up or failing to address the real issues, because even giving mental space to that or thinking about sitting down and having that conversation with your senior pastor or your executive pastor, whoever you report to, is difficult or scary or unknown. And yet taking responsibility might demand that that's exactly what you do. Right, so that's right. What I mean by you've really got to, I think, spend some time thinking about what's the real issue. Mm. Because you can get busy solving things you think are the real issue when they're not really the real issue.
Right,
they're just symptoms of the real issue.
On one hand, it's a lot easier if somebody else makes the decision for me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, if I don't have to decide, if somebody else is deciding, like, I have to work. So,
oh, yeah.
But then if you pile up enough of those, like, is that easier outweighing the, you know, couple difficult or potentially difficult conversations that you could have to say, hey, I can't keep doing this at this pace? And I've been thinking about this a lot lately. If you're worried about, like, if I bring this up, maybe I'm going to get fired. I mean, if you get fired for bringing up something like that, you probably don't want to work there anyway.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So there's a book. I haven't read it fully. I've started reading it, but I got some friends I really respect, coworkers, say it's the best leadership book they've ever read. I will tell you, it's not an easy book to read. It's pretty academic and it's a little tough, but it's fascinating. I think it's by a guy named Edwin Friedman. He's since passed away, but it's called A Failure of Nerve. And so basically the idea, at least part of the idea of the book, is what you're talking about. It's a failure to make decisions. Decisions are hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to make decisions. It's why most people would rather not be the one to make decisions. We would rather just accept someone else's decision.
Yeah.
Because decisions require mental space. They require you to make choices that will make you unpopular with a certain group of people.
Right.
Will those decisions have consequences? But leadership, by definition, requires a certain level of decision making. And in fact, I think in the book he writes that the word decisive has its Latin root means to cut.
Oof.
And that's we don't like that. It is a division. To say I want this is to say also I don't want this.
Yeah.
And so I think what we end up doing is hiding in kind of the sort of ambiguous place of failing to make decisions, which is really a failure of leadership.
Yeah.
And I think that's I think that ends up hurting a lot of people. So by deferring difficult decisions, by deferring issues, by not having, sitting down, having conversations for a variety of reasons. I might get fired, whatever the case may be. We just end up kicking the can down the road and exacerbating the problem further and further. But real leadership and what I would call responsibility, it looks like stepping up and making the decisions necessary to actually deal with the that's what it means. And that's when you become a real leader. When I will tell you this. So I started being pastor in 2017, and I have watched my dad lead the church for so many years, 30 years, phenomenal leader, but also very decisive. And, you know, I would say he was one of these guys who's like, his description of his leadership style was like, you know, man, he was like, we're on the Oregon Trail, and if we got the wagon train going, and if you fell off the back of the wagon, I'm not stopping the wagon train to pick you up. And, you know, I think we all know a lot of like boomer era leaders that are kind of like that. And so I kind of came in with this sort of, honestly, this smug pride that I was going to do this in a way where people were going to like me.
Okay.
And not that my dad wasn't well liked, but, you know, it just, you see, oh, man, that rubbed people the wrong way or whatever. And so I'm like, oh, I'm going to be cool.
Right.
You know, people are going to like me in a different way, you know? And And it's and what I found was, and then 2020 hits, right?
Right, yeah.
And then it's like you have to, like 2020, and that's what happens in times of pressure. You don't really get the option of doing nothing or avoiding. And it forced me into decisions and standing for some things,
yeah.
And that I knew was going to make me unpopular. And it was the best thing for me.
Oh, wow.
Because I realized that leadership is not trying to please everyone, not trying to build, because there's always going to be people who aren't pleased. You're never going to be able to do it. So it's figuring out what do I stand for? What do I believe in? What can I really give myself to? And then really going after that.
Yeah.
And what I found and what we found when I started leading that way was like everything began to change.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean that all of our problems went away, but it just means that we started getting momentum where we didn't have momentum before. And I think that's part of the thing of leadership is like you're actually going somewhere, but it requires being bold enough to step out and make those tough decisions. And so, yeah, I think that's part of what's required.
Yeah. And I think it's to your point, there's so much about leadership that's everybody's responsibility, you know, in my own life to lead myself, to show up with solutions and to, you know, whatever little part I'm responsible for that I'm leading well and making decisions and not just wishing somebody else would do it for me.
Yeah. To not put your life in other people's hands.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I think we do that so often is that we basically give or hand over our decision rights to other people and then we resent them for it.
Right. Yeah, oh my gosh. Yeah, we're doing it to ourselves. Yeah, we're giving you permission to ruin my life.
Yeah. And then I hate what you're leading.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
oh my
exactly
gosh.
Right.
That's like that's probably a book title in there somewhere for a production person. Oh, man. Hey, I want to thank you for making time again for a second conversation. For those of you listening, this is way better than the first one. Just don't worry about it. Yeah. But no, it's been great just to connect again. And yeah, looking forward to being with you again at Philo in a few weeks, I think now.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. This has been fun both times.
Yeah. That was a great conversation, as good as the first time we recorded it. Like I said in the intro, I'm really looking forward to the word that Whit will share with us at the Philo Conference, and that's coming up real soon. So if you're listening to this in real time, we're in Holy Week, and we've been praying for everybody who's doing services and stage turns and all that goes into preparing for Easter. And most of all, we're praying that we all have moments to remember why we're working so hard and that each of you are able to tie what you do to what Jesus did for you at Easter. Super important. All right, thanks for listening. Don't forget about the discount podcast 10. And you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Philo Community. And you can stay up to date on everything that's going on with Philo. All right. See you on the next podcast.